opens wide to Wade. What a dunk! Fournier blocked his dunk.
Here's Wade against Green. Euro step. Basket. And a foul.
Welcome to the Heat Check. I'm Wes Goldberg. With me, as always, it's David Ramil. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing pretty good, man. I mean, considering it's the summer and all, I think these are the dog days, right? But I think we've got enough going on to entertain people for the next hour or so.
Yeah, it's supposed to be the slowest week of the sports year, right? So we're here with a podcast, liven things up a little bit for Heat fans, right?
Damn straight.
So basically, since the last podcast we had, officially signed Gerald Green, the Heat did. And Amari Stoudemire has joined the Heat as well. So let's just dive right into it. Let's start with Gerald Green since that happened first. I know you and I were texting back and forth a little bit. I love the Gerald Green signing. It reminds me of the Josh McRoberts signing last year in that that's the guy that I wanted for like that mid-level price, and I wasn't sure it was going to happen, and the Heat did it. That's who I wanted from the get-go was Gerald Green. I thought it was a perfect fit, and I wasn't sure it was going to happen, but they got him at the minimum. I know you were a little bit more apprehensive about it, though.
I'm trying to think now, and I honestly can't remember why I was so apprehensive about it in the first place. I guess they had just been linked to other names or maybe somebody that might fit. I think there's just like this glut at the guard forward position, these tweener types, and I don't know that Gerald Green and his history for bad defense are necessarily a fit here. But then once I saw that when he had been signed by Miami, that Pat Riley personally challenged him to concentrate and focus on defense, that was much more encouraging to me. So I think I've kind of come aboard a little bit.
We've seen guys like Mike Miller, right? I mean, Mike Miller was not, he was kind of like that Gerald Green type. He was a good long-range shooter, not a good defender, known for not being a good defender. He wasn't nearly as bad as his rap was in Miami. We could both agree on that, right? He was a better defender than he was given credit for.
Considering his lack of mobility, he was an earnest defender, let's say.
Earnest. I love that word. He was an earnest defender. And I think that's all we're going to need from Gerald Green. He just needs to show some earnestness. We're going to have Whiteside in the middle. So he's going to have that security blanket behind him. He's going to be surrounded, presumably, with other good defenders. So it should help. Having that three-point shooter, that's something that was such a weakness last season. And he is a proven three-point shooter. So we talk about like those guys that are the guard forwards, like, you know, James Ennis, for example, Henry Walker. I mean, these are guys without a proven track record of shooting threes and making them consistently. When you have a guy like Green, at least you can just chalk it up. You say, okay, this guy's going to be a 36%-ish three-point shooter at, you know, the low end, and he could probably be high as like 40%. That's what they need. And for the minimum deal that they got him for, I think it's an awesome signing.
I am concerned about how he fits as far as like lineups and everything else are concerned, but you're absolutely right as far as his shooting is concerned, his athleticism. I think a lot of Heat fans are going to be, maybe they're not as familiar with what he was able to do in Phoenix. I know he's been around a lot. He's played for a few teams already, but I think, you know, hopefully he'll stick around in Miami. I know it's just a one-year deal, but I think he can show something different than he has over the course of his career as far as defense is concerned. And if he just brings the same level of offense, you know, the athletic dunks, being able to get out there in a fast break, spot up for three. I didn't realize he was as prolific a shooter as he's been throughout the course of his career. 37% practically, and he went as high as 40%, which you just mentioned. So that's a pretty impressive track record as far as long-range shooting is concerned.
Absolutely, and you know, it's a good sign when like Phoenix Suns bloggers are reaching out to us and saying, you're going to love this guy. And, yeah, you know, that was something that immediately happened when the Heat signed him. I just heard nothing but positive things. He's a guy that I already enjoyed watching in Phoenix. They got rid of him because they just have so many good young players there that are still under contract. It didn't make sense for them to resign Green. They're still trying to unload some contracts and clean up that roster and tighten it up after last year. So it wasn't his ability necessarily that is why the Suns got rid of him. And I think the Heat picked up a really good player there. But let's talk a little bit about how he fits in. He's listed now as the backup shooting guard. He's kind of that tweener. We're talking about the new NBA where anybody could play between like the 2 and the 4 at this point, right? So he's 6'8", 200 plus pounds. He could play anywhere from shooting guard to, I think, a stretch four if they're going to play him like the Shane Battier type, if they want to go super small. They could do that on rare occasions if they so choose. So I really like where he kind of can slide around, kind of be that swing man who can kind of play the four a little bit. He's going to space the floor better than Luol Deng. He's going to be a better shooter than probably anybody else on that bench, maybe other than Mario Chalmers if he sticks around. So he's going to have a very important role. I think he's going to get a lot of minutes. I'm projecting somewhere around like 18 minutes per game. Does that sound about right to you?
I think that's a little high, to be honest with you. I think with the glut of guards that I mentioned before, I know that you think that he's versatile enough, but I think part of why Shane was as effective as he was as a stretch four was because of his career-long commitment to defense.
We're talking
about a guy who hasn't shown that up to this point. If he starts to do it, you kind of want him to test that against guys that he's more comparably sized to. I don't think you want him guarding a guy like LeBron as far as the power forward position is concerned, or a Draymond Green type or anything like that. So if you want him guarding guys and he's going to be getting into deep, it's not like he's been a piss-poor defender throughout the course of his career, but he hasn't been, let's say, stellar or solid or consistent at it. You don't want to test him at the power forward position, unlike a guy like Shane Battier, who's done that his whole career.
So even if he doesn't play power forward, I mean, he averages 19.9 minutes per game for his career.
I think that's high. And I did hear from one Phoenix area blogger who told me, quote unquote, "You will hate his defense. He doesn't get locked in a lot, and he gambles unnecessarily."
Interesting. Well, hopefully he does clean it up. But overall, we are
positive.
Would you grade it an A, B, B minus?
I would grade it a B minus, I think, because I think the offense is positive, and then there are still some concerns as far as his defense. But the commitment, that you want to hear that guy. Not a lot of people are as open about it at this point in their career where they can acknowledge that there's a hole in their game, a glaring weakness that they want to correct, and to have Pat Riley personally challenge you. You think a guy like Gerald Green, with his track history, his ability, probably could have gotten a better deal elsewhere. But I guess he was probably lured here by Pat Riley yet again. And I think it's going to work out pretty well. I think he's going to actually recommit and maybe accept that challenge from Riley.
I'm going to go a little bit higher than you. I'm going to give it a B+. The Heat needed a three-point shooter, and they got the best one that was available on the market. And
I'm okay with it.
Given the market and what they could do, I'll give it a B+. Let's move on to Amari Stoudemire, the other guy that the Heat signed. So Stoudemire's had a very long, prolific career. He's in the twilight of his career. This seems like the next phase now. He's taken a minimum deal. He's joining the Heat. He's going into that veteran trying to get rings mode. So we're going to see a whole new... It's not the falling star from the New York Knicks to the Mavericks anymore. It's, I'm the veteran, and I want to play for a winning organization. Stoudemire had a call with the media today, and apparently his comments were all of those things. He just wants to do whatever the coaching staff asks, whatever it takes to win, and wants to play his role. That's what he's saying. Do you expect that to be what he does?
Yes. I think he's capable enough. I've never heard anything bad about him as far as his locker room presence. I don't know that I necessarily see him the kind of outward vocal leadership player, but at this point in his career, maybe he'll evolve into that. He's always been a solid locker room guy. Maybe he's capable at this point of taking the next step and being more of a vocal locker room type leader. And that's something that he could definitely use, because I think Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade and even Goran Dragic naturally would be the guys who you think that would fall on. They're a little bit quieter in that sense. And maybe this is just such a professional team that they don't need that kind of rah-rah emphasis. But you want a guy like Stoudemire who shows a lot of emotion on the court. I think it'll be fun for Heat fans to watch. Somebody that they've despised over the last few years when he was in a Knicks uniform. Now you'll see that side of him. You'll have that kind of intensity, that kind of rage. I mean, don't forget, this is the guy who got so pissed off at the Heat, he was able to punch a fire extinguisher and shatter his hand. So there's something to be said for a guy who gets that passionate about the sport that you love. So I think it's something that the Heat fans will look forward to watching.
I'm rooting for Stoudemire. I always rooted for him. I don't know if I never really despised him, but, when he was with the Knicks, he was just amazing. That first half season that he signed in New York. And then they acquired Carmelo Anthony. It looked like, wow, the Knicks are really doing something here. But it kind of just blew up in their face, right? There wasn't enough shots to go around. The offense was more based around Melo than it was Amare, and it kind of blew everything up, and it just, everything was out of whack, and then it was just downhill from there for Stoudemire. It really wasn't his fault. Like, he had some injuries, things like that. But one thing he said was that he brings instant offense. He's been able to do that his whole career, and he's confident that he'll be able to do that. And that's absolutely true, I believe. I mean, you do have some concern with his age. He's 32 years old, and so you wonder if he's going to be able to have that same instant offense, so to speak. But looking at his advanced numbers here on Basketball Reference, on his per 36 numbers, I mean, he averaged
were great.
I mean, 23 and a half. Like, with age, you obviously you have decreased minutes, right? But if you just look at it, the Heat aren't going to look for him to be the centerpiece in offense. They just want him to be efficient and play well when he's playing. And if it's 5 minutes a game, if it's 15 minutes a game, if it's 20 minutes in a game where maybe Whiteside gets into foul trouble or something. But
he's a real effective shooter.
Yes.
I mean, obviously, I think he shot 65% or no, even higher than that, 68% at the rim, 65% in the painted area. And then outside of that, that's where the shot percentage decreases a little bit. But clearly, he's still capable of dominating. Well, maybe not dominating, but being real effective.
Yeah, you know, 23 and a half points per 36 minutes last year with the Mavericks at a 58% shooting clip.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think he'll thrive in the pick and roll, so you kind of want to see what he can do with Dragic, or assuming that he's going to be the backup center. I guess it would be either Napier or Chalmers running that pick and roll action with him. So I think if you see a lot of his highlight videos from his time in Dallas, which is a more effective, I guess, gauge for where he is at this point in his career, you see him kind of working really well with Devin Harris, getting a lot of those lobs towards the rim. He can't catch them quite the way he used to in Phoenix, but he's still, again, he's an earnest offensive player. He really tries still. There's still that effort level, which is something you really want. It's a good addition overall. Obviously, he has his weaknesses too, though.
He's got his defensive weaknesses. I mean, that's always been the case. And I'm looking at his defensive box plus minus.
Yeah.
Last season was a negative 3.1, and
that's not good.
Not good at all. So basically, for those that don't know, the defensive box plus minus, that is basically just a measurement of how they do and it's measured against the league average per player, translated to a league average per team on the box score. So basically, it's just measuring how they impact the game against the league average. So basically, what a negative 3.1 means is that he's 3 points worse than the average defensive player, you know, average being zero. So that's not good. And if you look at a guy like Chris Anderson, who's been rumored to be on his way out now that Stoudemire's in, Anderson's defensive box plus minus is a 2.3 last season. And in fact, Anderson's never had a year in the negative for that stat, while Stoudemire has had only 1, 2, 3 years in the positive, and that was a while ago. So last 5 years has been in the negative. So
I did hear from somebody who watched him closely in Dallas last year, and he told me that he could do well with a defensive-minded power forward there to kind of offset his weaknesses at the center position.
Udonis Haslam?
That's a possibility.
Chris Anderson, if he's in there with Bosch, maybe.
Yeah, I could see it with Chris Bosch because, you know, Bosch's perimeter defense is so good, and he's, you know, surprisingly strong. You'd think he wouldn't be as strong as he is, but he's a very good defender. I don't mean he's not going to blow anybody out in the low post or anything like that, but he's still a very good defender, obviously. So I think that's a good pairing there. You just, you know, you want to see what Eric Spoelstra can do as far as staggering his lineups, because he's got a lot of options now, which is something that he probably didn't have last year, given the overall talent level and the injuries that ravaged the team. But now you've got McRoberts there, who's a pretty decent defender, maybe not great, but decent. You've got a lot of options there. So it's interesting. You know, you've all of a sudden got a much deeper, more versatile team. I think a lot of people see that, but at the same time, it's interesting to see how all these pieces will come together.
And you actually have an opportunity now, if you want to rest Bosch a night, or if Bosch is injured or whatever it might be, you can start Stoudemire over McRoberts, kind of maintain that stretch four type position there, and still be able to bring McRoberts off the bench and then move Stoudemire over to the five if you want to do that, because the way this roster looks like right now is that Bosch, McRoberts, and Whiteside are going to be your three main bigs. Whiteside can leave, Bosch can slide over to the five, and McRoberts can come in and play power forward. And you kind of have that three-man rotation there with your bigs. Stoudemire can kind of be like Bosch if something were to happen to Bosch for a game. I think that gives them a lot of versatility and a lot of important depth as you go along the 82-game stretch of the season.
Yeah, and conversely, could you imagine going big with like Whiteside, Stoudemire at the four, and then Chris Bosch at the small forward position? That'd be a pretty imposing and capable lineup, I'd say.
Absolutely. I didn't even think about that. That would be insane.
Yeah. I mean, because I think we've seen Chris defend small forwards. We've seen him defend point guards effectively. It's not something you want to do for 30 minutes a game, but I'm sure he can hold his own against some small forwards out there.
So they could go they could go big with those guys. They could go small playing Winslow at the four. They could play Bosch at the five. I mean, this team, if they wanted to be versatile, if they looked at the finals last year and said, we want to be more versatile, they certainly did that.
We talked about that a lot last year because it just felt so obvious that Miami and a lot of teams were trying to recreate what the San Antonio Spurs had done the previous season when they eviscerated them in the finals. And we thought, to use your term, that Miami was trying to go a little bit more Spursy. Do you see Miami trying to do that same, follow that same pattern as far as Golden State is concerned, having more versatile players that can go up and down the lineup?
I mean, I wouldn't give all of the credit to Golden State.
Sure.
I would say that just in general, that ability it's telling when Pat Riley says that Justice Winslow could be a Gerald Green or a Draymond Green type. Right, yeah. And I think a lot of fans took that literally, like, oh, is Winslow going to play power forward and sometimes play center? But I think what Pat Riley meant by that is he could play multiple positions and he could do a lot of things really well. And he could do everything from shoot to dribble to defend to get up in the air and block shots if need be. And I think that's more what he meant than actually playing the literal quote-unquote position that Draymond Green plays. And I agree with that. I think, you know, Winslow in college played some power forward and he played some shooting guard. And he can handle the ball. So he could do a lot of things. And I think that was definitely part of... It's hard to say that was part of the plan, though, because Winslow fell to them.
Right.
And if he didn't fall to them, we were thinking probably Stanley Johnson, right? And
well, he's definitely somebody who could fit that mold, as far as I'm concerned.
That's true, too. I don't know if he handles the ball necessarily as well as Winslow, but...
I saw him try and kind of create offense a little bit. Not as effective a playmaker as Justice Winslow, but right. I think... Yeah, I mean, he's not going to... The thing is, this is just unlimited experience in summer league, so take it for what it is. But I saw him bully his way with the ball on numerous occasions. So you kind of think that he could probably take that to the next level, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know if they're trying to necessarily copy it, but I think that it's nothing new. You know, I think we got to give the Heat credit for even ushering in this whole versatile positionless thing. So, you know, with playing McRoberts at the five was revolutionary when they did it, and playing Shane Battier at power forward, you know, was revolutionary when they did it, taking a shooting guard who played shooting guard his entire career and making him the four. So I think this has always been part of what Spoelstra has been wanting to do.
I agree. I'm glad you brought up the fact that Miami doesn't nearly get enough credit for it because they did kind of, I'm not sure if revolutionize it or not or invent it, but they certainly were a factor. And it's,
I mean, they were really one of the first teams to win a championship playing that way.
Sure.
You know, a lot of people, oh, the Lakers did it when they played Magic Johnson. They did that because they had to, and it was like one game. So, I mean, they didn't, and what the Heat did was that they did have to, right?
Right.
And they ended up playing Bosch at center because they had to. And then they just said, wow, that worked really well. And then they just did it for the entire next season and completely flipped their whole philosophy around it. That inside-out inverted offense that they went into after 2010 for that 11-12 finals that they just destroyed the Thunder with, that the Thunder could not figure out. And so I think that's always been part of Spo's DNA as far as how he wanted to do the team and just kind of having a year to rebuild and get back after LeBron left. Now we're seeing like kind of a different version of it, I think. Now they have a true center with Whiteside. They have McRoberts. They have Bosch, Stoudemire, so they have some versatility there. Winslow's going to give him a lot of versatility. You know, Dwayne Wade could play point guard. I think he's going to do that a lot when Dragic isn't in. There's a lot of guys that could do a lot of different things. And Josh Richardson, who we haven't even talked about yet, he could play. He can defend 1 through 3. And that's and they clearly, whether or not he'll be able to do it in the NBA, that's what their intentions were when they took him in the second round.
I agree.
All right, so overall grade on Amari Stoudemire.
Wow. I think because of his ability to score, the instant offense that he talked about, the fact that it's a minimum veteran when some people thought he might get the whole mid-level exception, I have to give it an A.
An A. Hmm. All right, I'll go A with you. I like it. I'm in a good mood today.
All right, nice.
So let's get some Twitter questions.
Absolutely.
So thanks to the listeners who tweeted us out some questions. We'll just go. We'll just run through them from the first one to the most recent one as we record this. So first one comes from Bore_Adam. Do the Heat have a shot in acquiring Ty Lawson? And how likely are the Heat in getting Jamal Crawford, and for who? Ty Lawson was arrested for a DUI this morning, so that's good news. That just says character guy all over it. Ty Lawson's not happening, right? Not happening. So just not even. He's making $12 million a year. He's not going to want to play backup point guard. The Heat aren't going to want a guy that just got a DUI. They're not going to want to pay a backup point guard $12 million a year. It's just not happening. Even if the Heat had the space for it, they wouldn't do it.
Yeah. I mean, let's say, I think I've seen some people, I guess, guess that maybe he'll be waived or cut outright or something along those lines. And if he becomes an immediate free agent at that point, do you bring him in if you can move either Chalmers or Napier? I'd say based on Miami's issues with those kind of players that they wouldn't take a chance on that. I mean, it's not, you and I were talking about this before the show, it's not your standard reclamation project where you have a guy who's made those mistakes in the past and is willing to commit to the Miami Heat brand of basketball and the culture. For all the crap that gets outside of South Florida, there is a culture of Heat basketball there, and they want people to adopt it and accept it. And I don't think Ty Lawson is at a point just yet where he is able to do so. So I don't think he'll fit in here, even if he was a free agent, even if he was willing to take a really substantial pay cut. And it would still have to force Miami to move either, like I said, Chalmers or Napier or both in order to bring a guy like Lawson aboard. So I don't think it's going to happen.
And as far as Jamal Crawford goes, if we're talking salary and if the Clippers do want to move him, and everything we've heard from the Clippers side is that they don't want to trade him. But people are wondering if he's available. I think this was happening more when DeAndre Jordan wasn't going to go to the Clippers, and they're wondering, all right, do you blow it up? Do you try to create some salary space or some cap space? So these Jamal Crawford rumors have died down since then, since Jordan decided to go back there. But we'll entertain the question. I think it's far less likely than it ever was that they're going to get Jamal Crawford. I don't think that's necessarily on their radar anymore either. And if they were to trade for him, they would have to trade Chris Anderson or Mario Chalmers. Those contracts match up pretty closely with Jamal Crawford's. I just don't see them making that kind of move, especially in the light of getting a guy like Gerald Green, who's strong offense, not so great on defense. That's kind of Crawford's game. Does that sound about like what you think?
Absolutely. And I think that's just part of Miami fan and their usual expectation that they're going to get some, you know, a veteran big name, or that somebody that fits a mold there and has, you know, that's the pattern that Miami has used in the past, where they've always acquired these guys at the tail end of their careers and things of that sort. You know, you got Stoudemire, you got a guy like Gerald Green, you don't necessarily need a guy like Jamal Crawford, who's known only for his offense at this point. I think you have enough weaknesses there between Stoudemire and Green. You don't want to bring another person like that aboard who isn't a defensive-minded player.
I'm glad you pointed that out, by the way, about like every time there's like a quote-unquote big name on the market, it's like, can we get him? You can't really blame Heat fan. I think a lot of NBA fan bases do that, but specifically with the Heat, it's like that kind of was the case for like that two-year period. It was Ray Allen. It was, you know, whoever they wanted, basically, that they would just get. But I don't see either of those happening. In fact, with Gerald Green coming in, they have a glut at that guard position, and they actually have to trim down. I think the whole Marcus Thornton thing, He ended up signing with Houston. I don't think he decided to sign with Houston over Miami. This is just me guessing, but it didn't seem like Miami was necessarily making the offer. They got Green.
They didn't, right? I thought that was what happened. He left Miami, and they didn't make an offer, and so he was kind of waiting
there. And he was waiting for the offer, and he ended up signing with Houston. So I don't think that offer was ever going to happen.
Which is too bad, because he's a good shooter. But, again, I didn't realize how potent Gerald Green was as a shooter, so I think you're covered in that regard, which is good, because you need that outside versatility, something we were lacking desperately last year.
And that backcourt off the bench, just to get off topic a little bit more, with Mario Chalmers, presumably the backup point guard for now, and Gerald Green, that's a good three-point shooting backcourt. I mean, that backcourt is better at hitting threes than the starting unit is. So there's an interesting dynamic there that can come in off the bench and kind of, you know, spark the offense, so to speak, and kind of introduce that more three-point shooting. They might not be as good in general as that starting unit, but they're going to be able to hit maybe that more efficient three-point shot than the starting unit will, so that's going to close the gap a little bit. And even if Chalmers isn't on the team, should he get traded between now and the regular season, Napier is a good three-point shooter. He's not a good shooter anywhere else on the court, but he's a good three-point shooter when he's open.
Have you seen that from him in Summer League? I know that was a question for him.
Okay. I think he was 50%, 2-for-4, I believe, last night from three-point range. But he needs to be wide open because he's so small.
But didn't we see that from him during his rookie year where he would have like those good shooting games and then go 0-for-4 the next night?
Yeah, but I mean, he had a very rocky rookie year, but I think in general his percentage last year was like 35-36% off the top of my head from 3-point range, but it was he didn't really shoot that many of them, and he was really, really bad from everywhere else. Like, he couldn't finish at the rim, he had a really bad mid-range game, which is kind of what he worked in college, if I believe. So I think if he gets a little bit more comfortable, that's what I've been seeing from Summer League so far. He seems a little bit more comfortable. He's not so aggressive with his shot. It's only been a couple of games, but so far he doesn't force the shot when he hasn't taken one in a while, which I noticed he did in his rookie year. More pass first than ever, which is playing to his strength, and earnest on defense. Not great, but at least trying. And I just stole your phrase, earnest on defense. I'm going to use that all the time from now on. I love that.
That's okay. That's the third time we've used it this podcast alone, so I think it's going to take off from here.
That's where we've started things on this podcast.
Absolutely. I think Spursy was huge last year.
Spursy was a big deal.
You should have trademarked it like 3P.
Next Twitter question. This is from Snotty Drippin. I know it's early, but how do you project Justice's first year going? Good question. I think he's going to... Well, do you want to take this, David? I've answered, I think, first last two times.
I'm kind of curious because it's not that I'm not necessarily high on Winslow, but I'm not sure exactly how he'll fit in at this point because the concerns are there as far as offensively, I think he's very skilled. I'm just not sure, which is strange because I think, you know, the defensive side of it is where everybody was projecting that he'd excel at right away, but I'm wondering how effective he'll actually be defensively playing the small forward position at the NBA. I'm hoping for things to work out very well, but what I saw from him in Summer League was an incredibly quick first step, not exactly a great shot, but the ability to get to the free throw line, etc. So you see a lot of speed from him, a lot of quickness, and a good handle overall, a pretty good handle. I didn't think that was part of his game coming in, but I was impressed by it. I wonder how he's going to fit with that kind of backup lineup there. I wonder if he's going to be able to bring the ball down. Is he going to look for teammates? I mean, if he comes in there as a second unit that it has, like you pointed out, Chalmers and Green or even Stoudemire there, is he going to look for those guys on the perimeter? Is he going to try and run the pick and roll with Stoudemire effectively? I don't know if he's much of a playmaker in that sense, and I think that was a knock on him in college, but I'm not sure exactly how he'll project. It's very hard to see that. And you know, I'm using Summer League and his college career as a model there, and that's not necessarily an effective way of looking at it. I mean, that's all we've got at this point, though. So I'm optimistic, but I'm cautiously so.
I think he shows a real knack for making plays and with the ball in his hand. And one of the things I noticed and pointed out yesterday on Twitter was that he waits until the last minute to make a pass, which is a good thing. Like the last second, he'll He'll suck the defense in as far as he can and then kick it out, which I think is a really innate quality that he that he's showing. I think he's just got a mature way of distributing the ball, knowing where he is on the floor, where his teammates are on the floor. I love all of those things. And that's the number one thing to me is he knows where he is in relationship to his teammates. And I think because of that and because he knows his strengths, that he's going to fit in really well as a complementary piece. He's not going to blow anybody away. Of course, he's going to have a few games over the course of the 82-game season where he's going to score like 20-something points or something like that. Maybe knock down three threes in a game that he just got wide open in the corner or something. And that's good. But overall, for the balance of the year, I think he's going to be a good complementary piece. He's going to come off the bench. He's going to do nice things. He's not going to be weak at anything. He'll make open shots. He'll play good defense. And he'll learn, and he'll get better as the year goes on. And I think that's how he fits in. That's what I expect from his first year. Maybe something like 8 to 10 points a game on the low end. Maybe something 12 to 14 points on the high end. Probably around 18 minutes a game. They're going to want to play him. Mid 30% from three-point range. I think he's going to get a lot of wide open threes. 34%, I'll say, from three-point range. Something like that. That's what I expect.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna veer more towards the low end of the spectrum on that. I don't know if he's going to be as prolific or productive as you have him projected at this point.
We'll see. From Randy Rose on Twitter with three A's.
Nice.
Yeah, way to spell it. Anyway, we see Darrell Wright reunion back in Miami. I would have said probably or maybe, you know, 50-50 chance at the beginning of the offseason, but now, again, with the Gerald Green signing, it seems like this team is trimming, not adding right now. I just don't see it happening right now.
That's too bad. I think he would have fit well. I mean, obviously, he's got some close relationships, personal friends that he's had and maintained over the years there with Dwayne Wade and Udonis Haslem. So you think a guy like that who's a veteran and has done some good things over the course of an NBA career would fit well with the climate. He knows the players, he knows the coaching staff, etc. So I think he would have done pretty well here. But I think you're probably right. Unfortunately, I don't know. I mean, unless somebody gets moved, but at this point, it just isn't likely that he'll be brought on board.
Yeah, I mean, the only way I see it happening is if nobody signs him for whatever reason. If nobody signs him, somebody gets hurt in the middle of the year and then decide to bring him in. But for now, it just doesn't look like it's happening.
And you mentioned he was linked to other teams, too, wasn't he?
Yeah, it sounds like the latest rumors are that he wants to go to L.A. I mean, there was a link between him and Miami that was much earlier in this free agency period. Now, the latest stuff is that he wants to go to L.A., the Clippers or the Lakers. And he'd be a good fit for either of those teams. The Lakers, he could be a mature veteran presence, and with the Clippers, he could fit. He plays a position of need for them. That swing position has been a need for them for the last few years, so that would be a good fit there, I think.
Is that still a position of need, though, with the acquisition of Stevenson and Paul Pierce?
I think you can always use as many as you can. I don't see why not. I mean, the Heat could use him too if they had just had the room for him. It's an important position. Last Twitter question, again from Randy Rose. Hit us with a twofer. Over under on how many games Dwayne Wade's going to play. And we're setting it at 65.5. That's a tough one.
It is. I know. You can point to the weight loss, the fact that he's somewhat motivated, or more motivated than he was maybe in other seasons. I think, you know, he saw the fact that he really seemed to enjoy being the de facto leader of this group last year, and he really liked having the ball in his hands. He said so on a number of occasions. So you know he wants to be out there, and he's trimmed down. I think a lot of people expect him to be over that 65-game mark.
And then you have the challenge, right? The challenge from Riley?
Right. Well, I mean, you take that with a grain of salt. That, the last time he issued a challenge like that, he saw LeBron signing with Cleveland, so I don't know how effective you want to point to that. But
and the motivation might be there too, because he signed a 1-year deal at $20 million, but he signed a 1-year deal with the cap jumping up next season, he's an expiring contract. It's a salary. It's a contract year for him. You know, I don't know if there was something worked out behind the scenes where they said, we'll pay you $20 million now, and then we're going to pay you X amount the next 2 years or whatever it's going to be until you finish your career. That's something that might have been discussed, and probably was, but it is a contract year. He's going to want to prove that he can still play. There's going to be that motivation to play more games. He hasn't played more than 65 games since 2012, 2013. He played 69, and before that, he hadn't played more than 65 games since the first year of the Big Three when he played 76 games. So, last 4 years, 62 games last year, 54 the year before that, 69, and then 49 the year before that. That was the lockout year. But
so, over or under?
I want to say over, but that seems like he can't. If he misses 20 games, that's 62 games. That'll play. But I want to say over, so I'm going to say over. Because this is our podcast, and I do whatever the hell I want. So I'm going to say over.
Nice.
What did you say? I already forgot. You said over.
I did.
Okay, so we're both optimistic.
Yeah.
Well, that's it for Twitter questions.
I have one. Are there any chance that Miami acquires Nick Young?
Ooh. 0% chance?
Yeah, I think so. That's probably putting it too highly.
Yeah, negative.
Can you have negative odds of ever acquiring Nick Young? Like, if there were no other basketball players in the world, they still wouldn't sign Nick Young? Is that possible?
I'm not a mathematician, David. I have no idea.
And you think, given the Michael Beasley history with Miami, but that's just different, I think. I mean, he knows the culture, and he was drafted by the organization.
Here's my question to you. Okay. Does Michael Beasley ever play for the Heat again?
I don't think so. I know that you wrote rather eloquently that there's always a place for Michael Beasley in the NBA, and I think that his talent has shown that, but I just don't think that Miami continues to give him the opportunity. I don't know what the decision process was as far as letting him go and not exercising the option on his contract, but it wasn't like he was going to be making a whole hell of a lot of money, but I guess they just want to go in a different direction, so... I don't see them. I can't even see them offering a 10-day at some point unless they have like another incredible rash of injuries like they did last year.
I think it's best for both parties that they just don't get back together.
Right.
Yeah. I think it was a healthy breakup. Like, and there's no reason to come back together, even for a 10-day contract. You don't need to open that door again. But we'll always love Beasley. Unlike Mario Chalmers, we'll always love Beasley.
No, we love Mario Chalmers.
This podcast is very pro Mario Chalmers.
That's right.
If Mario Chalmers gets traded, I think we should just rename the podcast the Mario Chalmers Memorial Podcast.
He didn't die. He just got traded.
If Heat fans had their way, that's all I'm going to say.
a vocal minority of Heat fan out there.
Do you think it's a minority? I feel like most people just are annoyed with him. Every time I see any Heat fan watch a Heat game, you go to a bar, I talk to my dad, when I'm watching a game with my dad, he's like, Chalmers, oh my god, like, of course, and then you go to a bar and everybody's like, every time Chalmers does anything remotely, even slightly wrong, oh, what's going on? But everybody else has a lot more wiggle room. We've talked about it a lot, how he has absolutely no leeway, and everybody else on the team can pretty much do whatever the hell they want and still be beloved.
Like, I totally picture, like, an indie rock band in South Florida somewhere with the name Fucking Chalmers, because that's, like, I'm sure that they've had several incarnations, but somewhere along the way, there's just been a band that's been called that, because it's just something you hear, like, 50,000 times a game, you know? I can imagine that the American Airlines Arena, they probably block it out at some point, but yeah, it's, he's not exactly beloved. I don't know. And maybe it was emphasized also because of the whole Big Three era and the video of everybody yelling at him at one point or another. And I don't know why it became so easy to do, you know?
Well, he was the weak link in that starting lineup, right? I mean, it's like you got Wade, LeBron, Battier, Bosh. I mean, those are like four really good players. Battier was really good. He played his role great.
You're thinking 2011, 2012. I'm talking maybe even 2010, 2011.
Oh, 2010, he lost his starting job to Mike Bibby.
Well, yeah, and Eric Dampier. He was the weak link at some point.
Oh, jeez. That 2010 team was full of weak links. Yeah, we don't need to talk about that. Yeah, Eric Dampier, Mike Bibby. Good times.
Dexter Pittman.
Good old Dexter Pittman. What's your thoughts on big Joshua Smith?
He's big.
Yeah.
Sums it up best. I don't think he's got a legitimate chance at the NBA at this point. He's really, really rough. I think, you know, we've seen on a number of occasions a number of players who lost the weight and have been able to thrive. It's very rare that you can maintain that kind of bulk. And I think a lot of guys do it, you know, in high school and maybe even at, you know, smaller college level. I don't know where he went to school, so I can't say
for certain,
but I'm sorry.
Well, he started out at UCLA, I believe, but he transferred to Georgetown. I think that's right. But I know for sure Georgetown.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure he started at UCLA. I'm too lazy to look it up.
What career did he have at Georgetown?
I mean, he wasn't drafted, but I think he's a good passer. He shows a soft touch on his passes. I just think the big issue with him, he's got a decent touch on his shots. The big issue with him is that he's just really, the big issue with him, period. He's just really fat. And he just he needs to be in shape. And, like, it just doesn't work. Like, not everybody could be Glenn Davis. And I don't think everybody should want to be Glenn Davis. But
no, I don't think anybody should want to be Glenn Davis.
You know, his passing does remind me a little bit of Boris Diaw. I don't think he's got that point forward skill. But just in terms of that soft touch and that, you know, he sees the floor. And just, like, obviously his rounder shape. But it's... I don't know. He's obviously gonna need to lose weight. He's probably got a spot in the D League somewhere. You know, he could get with an NBA type training staff, work out around the clock, maybe lose some weight and shed it off, and maybe there's a spot in a few years. But one thing's for sure is I really enjoy watching him during D League.
It was funny because you kind of see, like, every time he made a move. Out in the court, and let's say he dragged the defender with him on his way to the basket. He was able to, you know, go up for a layup and not go up very high. But anyway, you see the bench kind of like tuck their face into their shoulders as they start to snicker and stuff like that. I don't know. It's not a good look. Want to see your teammates be more supportive, but they kind of like cheer him on. But it's just kind of like, oh, look at the fat kid finally getting his.
It's a little tongue in cheek.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because you're with an organization like the Heat who have perhaps one of the greatest success stories as far as fat to fit in all of NBA history, and Udonis Haslam, a guy who was a real porker at the University of Florida and at Miami High. And, you know, Pat Riley told him, hey, look, buddy, lose the fucking weight. And he did. And he's had a nice 12-year career as a result. So this is, you know, if you're going to have an example, stay away from Baby Davis. Look for Udonis Haslam.
And maybe that's the case. He goes overseas, he plays in the D League for a couple of years, and he slims down. I don't think either of us are ruling that out.
No, I mean,
he'll have access to the best training staff he's ever had in his life.
He's probably better suited as a power forward than as a center, and he's going to need to drop 100 pounds in order to do so.
Biggest Loser.
At least.
All right, David. Thanks for joining me. Good work as always. Keep it up, buddy.
I'll do my best.
Thanks
no
for
listening.
No guarantees. It's a non-guaranteed contract. So, this has been the Heat Check Podcast. Follow us on SoundCloud. Find us on iTunes. Rate us. Review us. Say nice things about us. I say that every time. We haven't had a review in a while. We'd really appreciate it. Not to sound like I'm begging or anything. Check out the website, heatcheckpodcast.blogspot.com, and we'll join you next time. Thanks for listening.
She acting like a boy and I'm a letter. Learn from Project Pata. Pippin' got a master's. Girl, improvise. Look me in my eyes and lie to me. Lie to me. Act like I'll believe anything. Sex on the beach and in the backseat. This could be us. So back to what I was saying. This could be us, what you playing? This could be us, what you playing? I'm high up, I don't sound crazy. This could be us, what you're playing. That's all I was saying. No peace to track this Mercedes.
Here we go.
I bought like Tracy McGrady. Before that girl touched anything, she got up to say please.